I'm tipping Italy and England.
It's still on.
It's either coming home or it's time to say goodbye. We'll see.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast and download the OTB Sports app.
Okay, good place to start with Paddy Agnew. Paddy, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, lads. I'm grand. How are you?
Owen thinks that there was the best mind games he's ever seen going on when the coin toss happens for the penalty shootout and Chiellini is essentially the world's happiest man. Like, is he clowning around? Is that his character? Is it mind games? What's happening?
It's a bit of all of them, but I'll tell you one thing. I know Chiellini, I've spoken to him, and he's a very relaxed dude. And he's a guy who thinks outside the box a lot. He's not your average footballer. He looks like a big wardrobe of a defender, and he only thinks football. Well, it's not true. I mean, this guy's got a university degree. How many people in Euro? How many players of the Euros have got a university degree?
That's very interesting. What I just thought it was, here is somebody who is at the very end of his career who has decided, I feel alive right now. How many times in your life do you get to say, right this moment, I am alive? And he's decided to embrace the moment, as opposed to Jordi Alba, who's like, oh, I've got the weight of, like, I've got the weight of Catalonia, I've got the weight of Castilian Spain, I'm captain in this team, I've got to go over there, my manager, I'm not really sure, our best striker, he didn't pick him, played well, but do I trust any of these guys? Whereas Chiellini's like, whatever happens, it's about to happen, we can't stop it.
Yeah. And I also think the atmosphere that Mancini's created within the Italian camp, the sense of we're all in this together, the sense of gruppo, as the Italians call it, is there too. I mean, they feel very sure where they are, and they're in a very good place, the Italians, with Mancini. I mean, I think an awful lot of credit to what's happened to Italy in the last month rests clearly with Mancini.
Chiellini maybe as well, Paddy, is feeling the sense of, I missed a bit of this tournament and I'm just happy to be back, because there was a sense maybe at the start that if Italy got knocked out early, that could be his tournament done and that could be his life as a tournament footballer over, except obviously that was never going to happen because Italy had been amazing and they were always going to go deep into this tournament. And maybe he's just appreciative of still being around and still having this opportunity.
Oh, absolutely. In his case, you know, he's 36. He's 108 caps. He's obviously at the end of his career. And he's had a number of injury problems. And there was a question mark at one point whether he'd even make the squad. So he's more than delighted, like any player at that point in his career, to be there and to be playing in the final of a tournament like this. It's fantastic.
Are you surprised by how well himself and Bonucci have done at this tournament?
I am a little bit, because both of them have had physical problems. Like, you know, as I always joke before, I mean, between the two of them, they're, you know, 70 years old and 214 caps or something. But I mean, they've been around for a long time, and you'd 6 matches so far in the month, maybe, and now a 7th. You'd wonder if they'd lasted out. But they've lasted well. They've always been very good players, and they showed it again last night.
If there's one team that you reckon would be totally chilled out with Spain having a lot of the ball, all the possession, plenty of passes, you reckon it would be Italy. Like, was that the game plan, to sort of sit on the ropes a little bit and let Spain tire them out?
To some extent it definitely was, because Mancini acknowledged before the game, he said, you know, this is, we're playing one of the best footballing sides in the world tomorrow. He said before the game, i.e. we're playing a side that like to knock it around. They knocked it around. And he said they're even better at playing the possession game than us. We can't match them at that. We just have to try and hang on in there. And basically, if you look at the Italian papers this morning and you listen to the Italian commentators, the word that comes up most often is sofferenza, that we had to hang on in there and suffer. And that is, of course, traditionally one of the things that Italian teams do well. You know, I mean, it's not, you know, Gary Lineker's got himself into big row because he referred to Chiesa, the man who scored Italy's goal during the match, as I think he called him Catenaccio O'Clock. He said, you know, there you go, Italy playing their old Catenaccio game. To some extent, Gary was right there, and in that, you know, the better team on the night, better footballing team on the night was Spain. And that's the first time that's happened to Italy in this tournament. But they were able to ride it out, and they've enough class, and they do have a lot of class, to take their chances, both during the game and at the penalty shootout.
I think it's really interesting to see a team who is as unified as they are and who is so clear in what their identity is. It's obviously manifest in the defending, and a lot of it was last gasp, but that's what it's like in a tournament in many respects. But the goal where the keeper just gets it and realises that it's on, and three passes later, it's an absolutely beautiful finish. After the move breaks down as well, everybody's still switched on. Like, everybody in the Italian side needed to know exactly what their role was for that goal to work.
Absolutely. That is the type of football they've been playing for the last 18 months. They don't usually get as little, they got quite a lot of possession last night, but they usually have like 70% of possession in games. They didn't have that against Spain. But yes, that was a move that the sort of quick break on the counter. And that's what Gary Lineker was complaining about, saying, oh, that's how Italy playing counter-attacking football. I don't think he's entirely fair in the sense that, you know, they've shown in this tournament so far that they're not the average Italian national team, and they can play some very good football. And they will do when they play England. You know, I mean, at this point, if they play England, of course, you know, you'd have to fancy the chances against England if they can, you know, recover physically and mentally.
And of course, they have the extra day over whoever they're playing in the final as well. Which, you know, Chiellini's age, that those extra 24 hours are going to matter a whole heap.
Yes, they are.
Paddy, you've covered Italy in tournaments for decades at this point. Did you think, starting out, that this was a team that could replicate the 06 team, for example?
Yes. I mean, if you look at all the things that I wrote in previous to this, I said, you know, that when you come into this tournament, Italy are obviously in the... they might not be in the very front row of the grid if it's a Formula One race, but they're certainly on the second row if they manage to get through the shock of the first round. Because a lot of the team hadn't played in a tournament before, then they're going to be serious challengers. Because the winning run they put together coming into this tournament was not casual. There's a reason for that,
and the reason is Mancini, I think, is it?
The reason very much is Mancini. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's very clear about this Italian team is that there's a whole sense, like there is with every national team, but there's a whole sense of national pride. And the national pride here is obviously two factors that have come together. One, that you're recovering, it's a redemption from the humiliation and shame of not qualifying for the Russian World Cup in 2018. And above all, even more, a whole sense of getting back into some sort of normal life after 18 months of COVID. Remembering that Italy was the first country in Europe to hit by COVID and was hit very badly.
Yeah, so you can see how that outpouring is. I mean, obviously, it's not unique, but certainly the footage that we saw of Italy at the very start was the most horrific. It was the epicenter for the first. Certainly, if you go back February, March, 2020, that's where we were seeing the bodies piling up and the stories coming out.
Italy was caught unprepared. They were the first. They didn't know what we were dealing with and how to deal with it. So the Italians had a very difficult time. It was as simple as that.
Why is Mancini the perfect manager to redeem the team and then also to unite the country?
He's a perfect... a winning manager is a perfect manager in Italy, that's for sure. And he's a winning manager. But he is a guy who, as a player, was a wonderful player, absolutely sumptuous player. And he's, turned Italian football on its head because he's picked only players who can really knock the ball about, are comfortable on the ball, as I keep on repeating, like piedi buoni, have you good feet, as Italians say. And therefore, they've played very attractive football. And that has really sparked something in public opinion and people, who were very disillusioned after the failure to qualify for Russia. are very much behind Italy at this point. As you can imagine, it's a very happy Italy that woke up this morning.
And is that indicative of what football in Serie A has become over the last decade or so? Has Catenaccio effectively been renounced? While it's still part of the traditions and you can always, when you need to, batten down the hatches, but actually to be more expressive, to play on the half turn, to fizz the ball into very tight spaces and to expect whoever gets it to be able to control it and keep possession?
To a certain extent, absolutely. You can go back to old ways, as Italy did a bit at times last night and against Austria too, but if you have to. But yes, Serie A reflects that a bit. If you look at a side like Atalanta, for example, who've qualified for the Champions League in recent seasons, they play a very intense 90-minute attacking game, which is most unusual for Italy. So, yes, I mean, we haven't seen anything like this in Italy since in Italian football since the legendary days in the 90s of Arrigo Sacchi's AC Milan, the Milan of the three Dutchmen, Rijkaard, Hulut and Van Basten. But, you know, they were three Dutchmen, and that was one of the reasons why they were able to do that. This is an all-Italian version.
Why didn't the three Dutchmen inspire something more long-lasting and sustainable from an Italian standpoint then in the 90s?
That's a difficult question, but it's obviously the basic answer is that you've such a tradition here of go out there and defend first, get your defense in order, and then if you get a chance to score, score, and if you win 1-0, well, that's grand. That mentality had been around for so long. It took a long, long time. And people looked at the Milan thing and thought, well, God, they're fantastic. But I mean, you know, what would it be like with the three Dutchmen?
Yeah, they're kind of a unique case. Sorry, Ger.
Oh, I was just going to say, if you think of Juventus and Milan in the, I had to just Google it quickly, 2003 Champions League final where it's nil all and it's nil all after 90 minutes and everyone's like, oh, it was a masterclass of defending, and it was, but it wasn't particularly exciting, it wasn't particularly expressive. If Roberto Mancini had been in charge of either of those two teams, there would have been a winner in 90 minutes.
Well, yeah, I would like to think so, yeah. One thing Mancini's done is he hasn't been frightened about playing players with, you know, like he named, he's not here because he's injured, Zaniola in the squad before he'd even played a Serie A game. You know, he's a guy who, he knows his footballing onions. He doesn't need to be told who's a good player. He can, and he's picked all the best players in Italian football. He's got them here and he's got them playing.
There's going to be an unavoidable reflection on 1966 of England win tonight. Is the same thing with regards to 1968 going to happen with Italy, or does the World Cup success in between, whatever it is, 60 years, actually change that?
To some extent, yes. I mean, when Italy think of international success, they think of 1982 and 2006. Mm. And the 68 European Championship wins are a long, long way away in a lot of people's minds. But also what people will, you know, one of the things about the Italian public opinion and Italian fans generally is that they sort of take it until they fail to qualify for Russia. They basically take it as a right to be not just in the finals, but to in final tournaments, but to get to the at least the semifinals, not the finals. This will be Italy's third European Championship final this century. You know, I mean, they were there in the final in 2000 and 2012.
And I presume that just made last night extra sweet, the 2012 element, going into that final with such great hopes and getting smashed in that final to get one back on the Spanish, I presume. And it's not just 2012 either, Paddy.
No, the 2012 final, I'm sure, was in some people's head all right. I mean, if we remember that tournament, the first game that Italy played in it was against Spain in the group stage, and they really had a very good game, probably should have won it. So when they got around to the final, they fancied themselves all right, but they were just physically knackered. They had a game less, a day less to prepare for the finals, and they had a couple of players injured. And, you know, Spain were far too good for them that night. So it was definitely a moment of historical revenge.
In terms of Mancini, right, obviously the World Cup is in 18 months' time and he's going to take this team to the World Cup, clearly. Is there a third act for him back in club management, or does he ride off into the sunset at that stage? What's the future for him?
Mancini's 56, so I mean, it's a bit early for him to be riding into the sunset. I would, you know, well, we have to wait and see what happens on Sunday. If Italy win the European Championships, if they qualify for the World Cup, if they have a decent World Cup, I can see Mancini remaining in the position for quite some time, you know. I mean, some Italian coaches, some Italian national team coaches, in particular the famous figure of Vittorio Pozzo in the 30s, remained in the job for a long, long time because, you know, he kept winning World Cups and Olympic medals and things. And I can see Mancini would stay if he keeps on winning. But it's very simple. I mean, as soon as you lose a game, evaluations and judgments tend to change.
Yeah, he's got a bit of credit in the bank not having lost a game. it's in 30-odd, whatever it is. It's an incredible run that they're on. One last thing I wanted to ask. If most managers in world football hired their mates, they'd be accused of jobs for the boys. But in this situation, he's surrounded himself with his former teammates, all of whom were legends of the game when we all fell in love with Serie A and Italian football. And it's worked for him perfectly. Is that just a case of the writers, or the victors write history, as Owen was talking about earlier on, or is this actually the right thing to do, to tap into that wealth of knowledge from his former teammates?
Well, I think all he's doing is very, very simple. I mean, if you have a difficult job to do and you know you need some people to help you, you're going to pick people you can trust. So he picks Gianluca Vialli, he picks Fausto Salsana, Attilio Lombardi, three guys who played with him in the Sampdoria side that won the title in 1991. And he also picked Lelio Orealli, one of Italy's great players who won the World Cup in 1992 and who was general manager at Inter when, as a coach when Mancini was winning his first titles, his first managerial success. So he picked players who came from his footballing success and his managerial success, and guys he can trust. So it creates a very tight, coherent managerial team. And you can see that at work. I mean, one of the things he's done, it applied to some extent to Lippi in the 2006 team, but it really applies to this team, is that there are players who all, the atmosphere is good, they're all working for one another. They all know what they're meant to do, when to do it. And that's partly because of the managerial structure that Mancini set out.
Yeah. Well, it's working for them, as ever. It's been brilliant to watch. Paddy, great stuff. Thanks a million for joining us. Cheers.
Thank you.